SMQBs, episode 27. We are down a milk. We are up an Elise. That's right. We have a special Olympics correspondent tonight. We talk tons of Olympics, Simone Biles, get into the MLB trade deadline. We do not talk winners and losers at the trade deadline. Formula One drama, punchable face of the week, and Ted Lasso. Check it out. Share with a friend. Have fun.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys. They're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SMQBs, episode 27. This is the night we all kill each other, if it's going to happen. Hey, House, 26 episodes. We've talked shit about the Philadelphia sports scene, mostly the Eagles, to start all 26 of them. But, you know, tonight I'm going to let it pass. Because
I'm trying to pour myself half
a cup. No. You're off the hook tonight because the Philly sports scene is such a fucking mess that I even feel sometimes. So we're just gonna move right now.
I feel badly. Let's have a little toast to House. Poor Wentz is fucking them from another city, for God's sakes.
Unbelievable.
Pour one out.
Unbelievable. Remarkable.
Pour one out for
Wentz. Pour one out for old Wentzy.
You were right, Toby. Wentz is wonderful. We love Wentz. This is great. Yeah. Might be my favorite.
Poor Carson. Poor Carson and his toe. I feel so bad for him.
It's the curse of the unvaccinated. Go ahead.
We've got an interesting lineup tonight. We're down a man. Milk is recovering from the bar exam, so we're down. Milk, we miss you, buddy.
Feel better, buddy.
Back soon. Feel better. But we have our Olympic correspondent here with us to kick things off tonight. The Olympics are such a big deal that this podcast group could not cover them on their own, as we were told by our correspondent. So this is a special segment called simply Olympics with Elise. Hey, Elise.
Hello.
Hey, Elise.
Hi. Elise. Hey.
Our first Hello. Guest ever.
First guest.
You are our first honored. Guest. Elise from honored. Walnut Creek.
Yes, I am very honored to be here. And I appreciate you all letting me join you tonight, because after last week's podcast, I sent you all a scathing text saying that I did not feel that it was right the way that you were treating the Olympics, and wanted to be heard on the subject. So I appreciate the opportunity to be heard.
I think it was multiple texts. It wasn't just one.
It was multiple texts.
It was multiple.
It was multiple texts.
There were a few insults thrown in there, too.
Yeah. There were a few insults.
Well, I didn't know that you were the leading candidate for punchable face of the week for a moment there, but we think we're going to be okay.
That's what happens. When you speak up, we put you on the pod.
Right. Well, I'm glad to do it. And there's not a lot of sports topics other than, you know, my homers that I could really talk about with any intelligence. So I'm glad to be speaking on the Olympics. One thing that I have, one advantage that I have, and I've realized over all of you, is my time zone with this Olympics. And really it has, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking that you guys are disadvantaged. Everyone actually in this country, aside from the Pacific time zone, really is at a disadvantage in this Olympics because of the location of where they're at. So, you know, with it being in Tokyo and how late it is on the East Coast, by the time things are really getting started each day, I have the benefit that when I'm getting done with the end of my day, I'm watching most of this stuff live. And that's a big difference to be able to do. You know, the other night, you all know Pat, Matt, my husband, stayed up and was able to watch the end of the golf, Olympics golf. You know, it ended at 1 a.m. here, but imagine trying to do that on the East Coast. It's not even really a possibility. So, you know, on the weekends, we pretty much have the Olympics on multiple televisions going on around the house. When I'm working from home, I've got them on when we're eating lunch, we're watching them. And so it gives you a different perspective of being able to see things instead of just watching the primetime coverage. So I'm going to give you all a pass because of the advantages that I have for living in California. So that's number one.
That's not enough time on the Olympics. Let's move right on.
All right, next.
Not like a shout out for California, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I can go off on the San Francisco Bay Area teams, but I will leave that to another guest visit on this podcast. Now, I really do want to talk about the reason that I love the Olympics so much. And I think that it really does, even in this setting where we're having such a different Olympic experience, why I continue to watch things all the time and why I think that we need to think of it in more of a positive light. And I want to start with the fact that despite that there's no fans in the stands, I personally haven't missed them. I really haven't. I think there's some sports that get, I know it's crazy talk, but the sports that you guys probably watch more, which are where there's a little bit of professional overlap, are ones that I do think get affected by not having people in the stands. The large stadium crowds that really can make a difference. But when you're watching things like even gymnastics or watching some of the, I like to call fringe sports, you know, there are things that I've watched on these Olympics that I probably wouldn't have watched in any other Olympics because it doesn't really make a difference if there's fans there or not. One thing, canoeing. I watched canoeing semifinals.
You did?
Yes.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Semifinals.
Get a life.
I don't know because
what's wrong with you?
Elise, can I send you a case to work on?
Wow. Maybe you need to get out of the house and start working at the office a little bit.
Well, part of the problem is that I have a little too much free time on my hands because my case that was supposed to start trial today got removed from federal court. So no trial. So I got Olympics. I got Olympic fever.
So these were people just taking the paddle and canoeing in the ocean,
yes,
or whatever.
So who here can tell me the difference between canoeing and kayaking?
Canoe is open and kayak is enclosed. Your legs are under the within the hull of the kayak, and you have a paddle that has one on each end. Canoe is only one paddle.
That is the major on the difference. End. That is the major difference is the one paddle on the end versus the dual paddle.
I got another one.
So
I think in canoeing, your body's above water. In kayaking, it's below the waterline. Isn't that right?
Well, it's interesting. So the way that they do the canoeing, the single canoeing, they're actually on one knee.
Yeah, they're kneeling.
When they compete,
very comfortable.
In the canoeing. It looks horribly uncomfortable is what it looks like. But they go very long distances very fast with one paddle. It's pretty interesting.
So, Elise, let me ask you a question. Yeah. What are like the highlights of the Olympics that we might have missed? What's been the fun stories that we missed?
I think the fun stories, there's a lot of drama. We had drama today. I'll get into the drama later. We've had a lot of drama since the last time you guys met as a podcast. But the fun stuff, I don't know if any of you got a chance to watch our U.S. Olympic shot putter that won the silver medal. She is a character. She's a huge, bigger, larger than life character. Her name is, hold on, I'm going to look it up because I got it right here in my notes. She actually, after she won, her name's Raven Saunders. And she, after she won the silver medal, they're interviewing the gold medal winner. And she's twerking behind the camera, behind the gold medalist. It was absolutely hilarious. And then I got to see her twerk this morning on the Today Show. I mean, she twerked on US morning television. It was awesome. She is just a full on character. So seeing some of these people that we wouldn't otherwise have access to, you know, that we just wouldn't otherwise see, I think it's been really great. There's also been a lot this Olympics of Olympians that we didn't expect to really do well that have really stepped up. I mean, the women's team, after Simone Biles dropped out because of the twisties, and to see them step up in a really huge way and be able to win a silver medal. And then to see some of the individual medals that are happening in the Olympic, you know, with Simone gone, those are pretty amazing stories.
Who's going to be our breakthrough, our breakout star that suddenly we start seeing on TV and commercials and things that we wouldn't have expected?
Right behind Dude. House.
Yeah, Caleb Dressel, number one.
Yep,
number one.
I think Suni Lee is another one that will be a household. These are household names. I think Caleb Dressel is going to make the biggest mark because I think coming off of Michael Phelps' success, that we were really, as U.S. swimming, I think we were really concerned, especially with Katie Ledecky's start, about, I think we lowered our expectations a lot, and to see him step up in such a huge way. And he's very, I don't know if you guys have seen him be interviewed, but he's very thoughtful and very kind. You know, he's the one that after the relay win, he walked up there and gave the other teammate that wasn't in the finals with them his gold medal. I mean, he just seems like a stand-up guy.
I got to tell you that. I mean, that's nice. But unless he's riding that horse that was prancing along to the music, did you guys all see this?
The coolest horse ever.
Ever roam the earth. I don't give a F about Caleb Dressel. I want to see that horse marketing hot dogs or something. I don't know. Did anybody see that horse?
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was good. That's good.
The horse, you got to go find the horse that can dance. I don't have any idea what competition that was, what sport it was, or if it was just a warm-up.
Pope's, I think it's dressage.
Pope's on.
You're mute. No Pope's wonder he's been so quiet.
Oh, my God.
It's like fucking X Games. Dancing horses?
I'm so glad Pope got unmuted for that.
I watched the
surfing, skateboarding, and dancing horses. That's what I every 4 years I want to see.
I watched the Olympic women's basketball game today, U.S. versus France, and there's a new young player called Asia Wilson, who's a stud. I think she's going to be a rising star out of this Olympics.
We can't talk about the Olympics though without talking about the SMQB jinx that Pope dropped on the women's soccer team.
Yeah,
twice.
What the fuck?
First time in 9 years that they're not playing for the gold.
We didn't play for the gold in 2016. That was Germany and Sweden. It is. You know, they're a juggernaut off of the Olympiad, but they can't get the World Cup and gold medal back to back. The elusive double-double. You know, the women's soccer team, I think this is the last time you'll see a lot of these players together. Carly Lloyd's 39. She was really emotional after the loss. I think she knows it's over. Megan Rapinoe is getting older. Even Alex Morgan. So I mean, you might see him again in World Cup.
By the way, the fact that Alex Morgan is getting older is really like a punch to the gut.
That means we're ancient.
Because, yeah,
good Lord.
She's been young for a long time, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah, right.
It is right. True.
So,
yeah, no, Elise, just to, they're just still like, in there too.
But to wrap up your special coverage, Elise, who's an athlete from outside the U.S. that we should all go, or performance that, you know, putting the horse aside, an athlete or performance other than an American that we should go Google and search for and watch?
My favorite, I think you'll all know immediately why, was the 100-meter winner from Italy, who, by the way, was
from
born
America.
In El Paso.
Yeah.
Born in El Paso.
America.
Yeah. But what a story. And, you know, for me, I love to see if USA is not going to succeed, I love to see Italy succeed. But that is not, the 100-meter race is not a race that you expect Italy to take. That's just not. And he did an amazing job. And you know, it was a little different than our normal situation, because I feel like anyone who wins that usually has the arrogance level that is like off the charts. And he just seemed like a pretty humble guy. I mean, did you watch the 100 meter? Did you see the beginning of it? It was like, yeah. It was like a movie trailer, how they started that thing. It's pretty ridiculous how different they treat that race compared to everything else in the Olympics.
This guy was doping, right? I mean, that's the only way he could have won.
Wait a second. Elise, I got to ask you this. I mean, you say this guy from Italy, but I since you're the Olympic expert, does it not bother you? Like Rory Sabatini is from South Africa, competing under the Slovakian flag. This dude that won the 100 meter race is a goddamn American that is competing under the Italian flag. Are we just like pulling the wool over the eyes of the viewers as to where these countries or these people are really from? Isn't that a problem with the Olympics? Like really compete for the country. And if you can't qualify for your country, if that guy couldn't qualify in America, Rory Sabatini couldn't make it for South Africa, then don't be in the Olympics.
I don't know if I agree with that necessarily, Toby. And I think part of the reason is that we live in a country where we really identify where our home is. And I know it's a little bit different when we see people from the U.S. going and representing Puerto Rico or representing, you know, another country. The reality is I think home for a lot of people, especially when they have dual citizenship, is different than what you and I have experienced. And so I don't really, maybe there are times that people are trying to get in where they can't otherwise get in from their quote unquote home country. But I think a lot of this is identity of what you feel closely connected to representing. And, you know, Naomi Osaka is a great example. I don't think she could have definitely qualified as a US citizen, but it meant something very special to her and to her family for her to represent Japan. And look at how they embraced her and rewarded her with, you know, lighting the Olympic flame. I think there's something special sometimes about that choice, as well as others, you know, maybe it's not always the best of intentions.
Yeah, I'm glad she lost for Japan, not America.
Well, was the Italian runner unable to make the American team, or he just chose to identify as Italian?
I know he was born in El Paso, but I actually haven't researched to see whether or not, you know, where he spent most of his youth. I
think that makes sense because we have a big Italian group in El Paso. No, but
I think it was an Italian woman who had a relationship with a guy in El Paso. And I believe she went back to Italy with her. He had no relationship with his father until a year and a half ago or so. I think, but just sticking on some of the fun parts of the Olympics, man, one of the things that gets me are watching the families and their reactions more so than almost the athletes. Like, did you guys see that the Chicago Bears, one of their quarterbacks who's in training?
Oh, yeah.
That was David cool. Blau, I guess is Blau. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
His wife, Alyssa Gonzalez.
Oh, Gonzalez.
She qualified in one of the hurdle races for Columbia.
Was that the Lions?
The Lions. You're right. I said the Lions. Yes. Sorry. And she was, I don't think she was expected to win. There was a hope that she would get out of her heat and get to the final. And the video of the team, first of all, the team all made a good luck video for her, which was pretty cool. And then watching the team in the film room, you know, a bunch of guys in there watching it and how nervous he was. I mean, here's a guy who's, you know, possibly on an NFL roster, you know, definitely big time athlete. And he was so nervous that he was like biting his shirt. He could hardly jumped up and was just yelling at the screen. That kind of stuff to me is just as cool as any of it.
And Suni Lee's family too, watching her was really cool.
And it's kind of neat to be able to see them in their living rooms. You know, a lot of them that didn't go to, I think it's North Carolina is where they were hosting the families. You know, you're seeing them in their living rooms. And I think that there's something really special about that too. And to have their communities around when they're, you know, cheering them on. I mean, look at Alaska winning their very first medal ever. It's huge. It's great.
I, I agree with that. And I think you could also tell, because they weren't able to be there in person, some of the emotion that poured out after these Olympians competed and won, and they were able to connect with their families who they've been away from for so long and didn't have that support network there in Japan while they're training, the raw emotion that poured out was a pretty cool thing that you wouldn't otherwise see. So there were some definite silver linings to this kind of Olympics.
Well, go ahead,
Pope. No, I was going to, don't you guys think, I mean, I say it every 4 years. I'm like, I'm not going to get sucked into the Olympics. And every 2 years, inevitably I get sucked in. And what sucks me in is not like the professionals who are trying to get gold, you know, it's the amateurs. It's like, this is their one chance that they'll ever have potentially to, you know, to medal and to make a name of themselves and to justify the years of training that they did. And, you know, you have to give it to NBC or whoever's covering the Olympics. They know how to pull tug the heartstrings, and they give you the stories. I mean, to me, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but to me, that's what the Olympics is about. And that's how I always get sucked in. And, you know, unlike House, I do sleep at night, and so I don't watch, you know, the canoeing or the badminton or the Olympic the soccer. But I always get sucked in, and no matter.
I was hoping to get sucked in, but maybe it is because of the time zone. This is the least amount of Olympics.
Yeah, me too.
That I've watched, and I'm disappointed in myself. But I gotta say, like, the app, the Olympics app, sucks. Mm-hmm. You can't find anything on it. It's impossible to figure out when something's happening, what channel it's on. I mean, really, I don't think the Olympics were presented well. And certainly if you talk about digital and how that, you know, how that should have been coming right at us in so many different mediums and different forms, I think it's been terrible. You know, so I think that's why I've missed stuff.
So
should be a good time to think. Go ahead.
Hold on. But being the optimist in the group, I want to point something out that was new on this Olympics. But have you guys watched any of the coverage that Snoop's been doing?
Yes.
It is
amazing.
Mm-hmm. I got to hand it to Comcast for giving them a show. It has been absolutely hilarious. And I think it's drawing in even more people that maybe wouldn't otherwise be watching. So they've done some things right. I think some of the challenges I'm going to blame on the pandemic, because they couldn't cut as much B-roll as they usually do. You know, they couldn't go and visit people and do as much stuff as they usually do.
So I think, you know, we should talk about, though, there's definitely, look, I think we all know there's a lot of excitement and a lot of good, and there's great stories in the Olympics, but there's also been some controversy and some really sort of hard topics that have come up and have really, you know, been some of the biggest news making parts of the Olympics, and particularly Simone Biles' story. Elise, do you want to sort of tee that up for us, since this is the Olympics with Elise segment?
Yeah. Part two.
Yeah. So Simone Biles, America's sweetheart and number one person to watch and really the focus of the Olympics for discussion for the last 2 years, if not four, five really, chose to pull out of the Olympics because of the twisties. She performed some during the team competition, and was performing very poorly. No one really knew what was going on while it was going on live. They thought maybe she was physically injured. Then there was some discussion after they announced that she was not going to compete any further, that maybe it was a mental or emotional issue. And then as the week has progressed, and of course the media has focused nonstop every single moment on the story, it has come out that she has what is called the twisties, which is essentially a gymnast can lose their, kind of think of it like losing your balance, but they lose their ability to be able to tell up from down and side from side.
Yeah,
and
They lose their awareness of where they are in the air.
Spatial disorientation.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. And that's what Simone has been battling with and continues to battle with. But we did get some good news today that she is going to be competing in the individual beam exercises. That was the last thing that she, it's going to be the last individual performance. And they did announce today that she feels that she's up for doing that. And so really what I would suggest to the listeners and to you all to watch out for is most of that routine that she does, she can do, even if she has the twisties. The dismount is going to be the true test because that's really the only time that the twisties would affect her performance. So,
which by the way, is on tomorrow at 4:10 AM Eastern time.
Oh, that's only 2 o'clock and at least time.
Yeah.
Right.
Or no, 1 o'clock.
So
1 o'clock.
You guys will be up.
So I was looking into the difficulty of some of the vault work that she does. She's the only woman who attempts this one vault move called the Yurchenko double pike, which basically starts out doing a round off into the takeoff board, a back handspring onto the horse, and then a double somersault in like the Greg Louganis pike position in the air. And she gets way up there. So imagine doing that above a vaulting horse and not knowing if you're up or down, because, you know, if the danger is you land on your neck or your head and paralyze yourself. There's only a couple of men who even try this, and she is the only woman. So for people to kind of question her toughness for pulling out of these things, I think is kind of disgusting. Well, I mean, she's got nothing to prove. She's already the GOAT.
But that's the dark side of this story. It's not just a story about an athlete who's having a hard time. I mean, House, you saw some of the comments out there, right, about, I guess it was Piers Morgan, that fucking douchebag. Tell us a little bit what he said and kind of what he stirred up, because he's not the only one, unfortunately.
Oh, you got that fucking Clay Travis, you know, redneck guy who thinks he's now the conservative sports dude.
Well, this is what we talked about on the pod a couple of weeks ago. That's a real shame what is happening in the sports world. Sports has gone from the uniter of everything to now being an opportunity to further divide. And so we've reached a point with sport that it's black versus white. It's right versus wrong. There's either one side or the other side. And so a lot of folks, when they heard that Simone Biles had pulled out before, by the way, most of the criticism came before we then found out what was going to happen from the team competition or what was going to happen from the individual all around. It was kind of now this was something that belonged to America and belonged to the people, and she's taking it away from her. She's a quitter. She deprived somebody else the opportunity to compete by doing that. Mm-hmm. So these were all of the kinds of things. And if you can't handle the pressure, if you can't take the heat, stay out of the kitchen, was the kind of commentary. Yeah. Like, you knew what you were signing up for when you signed up for the Olympics.
And she's weak.
It also came on the heels of the Osaka withdrawal from the Open. And so it was kind of building on that sentiment of, you know, you need mental issues are not an excuse for pulling out. You need to tough it out and finish the job.
Here's the thing that I hope comes out of this, and I hope we get a wider discussion on this. Sports and the competition belongs to the people that are competing in them. While we can take civic pride or be happy about a win or sad for a defeat, ultimately the people who perform are the ones who have the victories or the defeats. And whether it's being a jerk-off dad screaming at your kid playing on the field and trying to control the outcome from the stands at a Little League game, or whether it's being a right-wing commentator saying that Simone Biles is a quitter and a disgrace to the United States because she's weak. These people on the field are not performing for you. They're not like these like little performance like frankly, slaves that belong to the people in the stands. They are competing for themselves, for their pride, and yes, for the country. But that's what really disappointed me, really, and reading a lot of the commentaries. They're not performing for us. They're performing for themselves, and we can take pride in their accomplishments.
Simone Biles has 25 medals in world championship events. She's got the most individual medals in one single Olympics. She's got absolutely nothing to prove to these idiots. And they act like they get to determine her legacy. It's up to them to decide what her legacy is. She could care less what they think, and she shouldn't.
Well, you know, part of Simone Biles' legacy, though, is, and you talk about the dark side, unfortunately. I don't know if you guys, the New York Times Daily podcast really dived into the layers of what's going on with Simone. I mean, remember, guys, she was part of the Larry Nassar Olympic doctor molestation group and was one of the ones that was involved in that. And she's the last standing American gymnast who was involved in that. And she made it a point to make the Olympics again this year because she wanted that story to be told. And she wanted the IOC and the United States Olympic Committee to own it. I guarantee you that that is part of the mental makeup of what's going on with Simone, and her lack of focus has probably led her to the twisties. And all these conservative commentators who are so quick to blame her and call her weak and a quitter, they don't have a fucking clue what she and all these other women and girls had to go through, and that was empowered and enabled by the U.S. Olympic Committee and their doctors and their, the coaches. And so for them to sit, in the armchair quarterback and accuse her of being a quitter and weak, it just doesn't stand the test. And it's pathetic.
So they should be ashamed of themselves.
Hope, you make another good point there too. And it's not, you're not being dismissive, but these are girls, right? These are, in a lot of instances, these are not young women even. These are really young kids who are, particularly in gymnastics, right? They are young kids who are doing this. And, this part about the gutting it out, toughing it through, there was a lot of, the instant reaction was to Carrie Strug, who of course everybody remembers, twisted her ankle and her coach, Bella Caroli, who's also a pig, kind of
bullied her,
right?
Bella and Marta.
He had bullied her for so long that he didn't have to actually bully her at that time, but he did. He bullied her to go back out there, and she jumped and had this very dramatic jump and landing, and the women won gold. And of course, her jump didn't mean anything because they had already won the gold at that point. They didn't need her to do it. But everybody has kind of instantly compared Simone to her. And, it's really disappointing because what people don't understand is the risk that these kids, again, they're kids, put themselves at. And there's a name that I have to give credit to my cousin, who on his softball team is known as E6, and his wife, Randy. They are frequent listeners. But the name is Elena Mukina. And I don't know if anybody remembers that, but Elena was a young Soviet gymnast. And she was pushed and pushed and pushed to the point where she actually had a fracture in her leg. And I'm probably going to get some of the details wrong here, but it doesn't matter. She was forced to do a jump that was incredibly dangerous, and she didn't nail the landing. And she landed on her chin and shattered her vertebrae and her spine. Mm-hmm. And she ended up a paraplegic. And the Soviets, they really hid the whole story because they didn't want it to look badly on the program. She ended up dying at about the age of 46 due to complications from her paraplegia. But that sort of gutted out, be tougher than everybody else in sports. Yeah. And listen, that's kind of where I come down on things too. I mean, that was how I came up playing sports, and most people on here probably did too. But it's an interesting conversation now, and good for Simone to be the one who said, this is not safe for me, and I don't have to answer to anyone else, like right. You all are saying. Right. So good for her.
And she has started the conversation.
That first example you gave, Suggs, was it?
Carrie Strug.
Competing on that bad leg cut short her career.
Sure.
It did. I mean, she was just talking about that today, as a matter of fact.
And she was very supportive of Simone. She came out and tweeted and said, "You got this." And I mean, very supportive. All of the women, to their credit, have been.
Yeah, very much so. I don't know if you all have know this, but because of Simone, the Crowley Ranch was shut down because she came out and said that she could not return to that ranch after she had been abused there. And that changed the world for US gymnasts in the future. It really did. And hopefully it's a safer world because of that. And Brian, I think you're right. I don't think you can ever, you can't ever be the same after sexual abuse. The type of sexual abuse that she experienced, you know, we represent a lot of clients that have gone through similar things to what Simone and the other gymnasts have. And it's forever changing, and especially to be under the spotlight that she's under, and to try to do all of it. I can't even imagine. I agree, going back to what Phelan said, she is the GOAT. She will always be the GOAT. She, in so many ways, and I look forward to seeing what she does in the future, because I really think there's a place for her in coaching and protecting these young girls in the future. To watch her on the sidelines and see what she does has been really awesome.
And it would be great if she had a walk off, drop the mic vault tonight and got the gold.
Yeah.
I think no matter what, I think once she competes at all, I think she puts a lot of her doubters to rest that you know, she did it on her own terms, dealt with her mental health, dealt with her twisties, and was able to come back. You know, Elise was talking about just the whole Crowley nightmare and what so many of these girls went through. We've brought this up before, but check out the 30 for 30 on this, the 30 for 30 podcast. It's season 7, which is like a 7-episode series called Heavy Metals, all about the Crowleys, the Crowley Ranch, and really the mental and physical abuse these girls go through. It's a great listen.
So Elise, when is, we got to move on to the next topic. What do we have, another week of the Olympics?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So keep watching. If
big track and field stuff.
Yeah. Watching.
And which is exciting. We've
got dancing horses.
People to watch.
So let's move on to because there was a lot of sports news this week. In addition to the Olympics, some of it people actually paid attention to. The MLB trade deadline was beyond active this year. Perhaps the most active we've had in quite some time. We had 10 All-Stars. 10 guys who played in the All-Star game this year changed teams.
That's a record. That's a record.
In one day. I mean, we were texting and we're like, no, he didn't. I mean, one day, it was unbelievable movement.
So the popular topic is winners and losers, right? Do we talk winners and losers? I mean, I think we all know that the Giants are a loser in this situation.
Wow.
She wasn't paying attention. I knew it. I knew she wasn't paying attention. So, but look, we don't have time.
Are you going to defend them, Elise?
No.
I will always defend my G-men. Always.
Do you think they're going to make the playoffs?
Yes, I think they're going to make the playoffs.
I don't think we have time to cover all the winners and losers in baseball this week, but I want to just ask a quick question just so we touch on this. Look, there are teams out there that made moves because they're close-ish, right? I mean, like, in fact, three of you on this call, the Yankees, the Giants, and the Phillies all made moves and gave up prospects. Yay or nay on that? I mean, those teams are probably not winning the World Series because of the moves they made. I guess probably the the Giants probably do have the best chance of those teams, although they got the, unfortunately, they're a victim of what other teams in their division did,
right?
That are going to probably block them from winning it. But you know, how do you feel? How do you feel about the Phillies making a move that, I don't know, was it that exciting, or does it just feel like they did something to do something?
I mean, our bullpen is so abysmal. They had to do something to even have any prayer of competing with the Mets. And so picking up Ian Kennedy, I think was good. And we don't have either really a starter number 4 or 5. And one of the guys that they were trying out to fill the 4th or 5th spot was this prospect, Spencer Howard. Did they give up too early on him to get Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy from the Rangers? I guess time will tell, but look, they were at the time only 3.5 back from the Mets. They feel like the Mets were gettable. And I do believe in win now. You get what you can to see if you can close the gap. At least in Philly, it's been a popular deal.
I think the East is gettable. I mean, DeGrom's got all kinds of issues. I don't know if Kyle Gibson is the answer. Ian Kennedy's going to be nice, but I think of all the teams, I guess, you know, the Yankees are further back, although they are a potential wild card, and all you have to do is make the tournament and you can get to the World Series. But I think the Phillies probably had the best chance to catch somebody.
Here's a good point on the Yankees, and I want to hear from you, Rooster, on this, but the Yankees gave up 6 of their top 30 prospects.
Wow.
And their playoff odds, listen to this, their playoff odds on FanGraphs went from 43% to making the playoffs all the way up to 45%.
Wow.
But it's all right. So first of all, the Yankees have an unusually deep farm system right now. I mean, they have 30 good prospects. That tells you a lot, right? They have about 5 that are untouchable.
Yeah, you kept your top 5.
And none of those left the team. Guys like how do you pronounce his name? Yasson Dominguez. No one's touching that guy. We didn't give up anyone like him. We also didn't give up any cash. And we desperately, desperately needed left-handed power. We had all right-handed batters. I mean, last episode, I was saying we have a bunch of slow right-handed batters in a park built for left-handed hitters. So we get 2 great left-handed sluggers, Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo, and they're both also defensive upgrades for us. So, and I think it's Gallo. He's going to be playing 2 years at least.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just a 1-year chase for the wild card. It fixed a huge hole in that lineup. And then Rizzo he's gone like 5 for 9.
I know. He's
already got 2 games, 2 homers
in the first 2 games.
And made a, you know, defensive gem of a play yesterday. So initially I'm thinking, this is great. We're back in the hunt. We were actually making some headway. The Red Sox are starting to falter. The Rays ace got hurt and has to have Tommy John surgery.
Sorry, Milk.
But then we go play the Orioles, and I'm thinking, now we'll just pick up 3 more wins. And of course they're getting their asses kicked by the Orioles tonight. So who knows? Who knows? But they didn't give up any money. They didn't give up any of the prospects they really wanted to protect, and they got 2 left-handed power hitters who they desperately needed. So I'm generally in favor of their move. And I think, you know, in defense of the Giants, they did what they had to do because of what the Dodgers did. The Padres are losers for doing nothing.
Okay, but wait a
second. Padres are in trouble because of Tatis. Tatis might be going out for a while.
On last Thursday, I had the good fortune of seeing at least 1 Hall of Famer and hopefully 2 Hall of Famer pitchers go up against each other in Max Scherzer and Zach Wheeler, Phillies Expos. And then a little rain and being down 7-0 forced me to leave a little early before one of the greatest comebacks in baseball history when we beat the Expos and extras on a walk-off grand slam. But that was the end of the Expos as we know them. We have not even had a full Major League Baseball season since they last won a World Series. Last year was just this round robin tournament that the Dodgers won, but the reigning full season World Series champions are the Washington Expos, and they deconstructed their team in a single day. Don't tell us with a straight face that you're okay with this.
But it's fascinating that you bring that up, House, because
you could argue they're winners, though, the way they did. They did get prospects.
Yeah, I mean,
they got some good prospects.
Yeah, but it's going to take them a while to get back.
You know, the team they're getting compared to the most around here is the Phillies, who won the World Series and then tried to keep the band together for too long and haven't had a winning team since then. So, look, here's the thing. The Yankees were going to play Scherzer $50 million a year at the end of this season. Scherzer was going to go take it, not because he didn't love Washington, but just because, you know, that kind of money is only going to come from one or two franchises. Turner was going to probably get, you know, a huge contract. Do I love it? No. I was at the game the other night. I'm looking at the lineup and I'm thinking there's literally one guy in the lineup tonight that I want to watch, Soto. But they pulled the trigger when they needed to. They got a haul of prospects. The guy who pitched tonight, and it looks like the Phillies came back and are going to win this game, but the guy who we got and pitched tonight went five innings, gave up four hits, one run, one earned, two walks, two strikeouts, a home run. He had 71 pitches, 47 strikes. I mean, his numbers were outstanding, and he just walked in and pitched.
Plus, Scherzer could come back next year as a free agent.
He could come back next year. So, I mean, look, you know, it sucks. You know my theory on this. If you're not winning, you're losing, right? If you're not the champion, then nothing else matters. And so
Ricky Bobby method.
First or last. The season's going by. But the difference between us and the Cubs, I think, because the Cubs, you know, they won the World Series in 16 and they just dismantled their team. Mm-hmm. The difference is, I think, that our owners will reinvest in the team. There's going to be a ton of shortstops on the market. Trevor Story didn't move.
Right.
You could see him in Washington. Talk about a loser. I mean, that's
right. A loser.
The
Rockies gave up a chance to really reshape that team with Story and his leverage, and
that's right. And he's not coming back next year. They're going to get nothing for him. So, you know, we'll see. It sucks, but I think it was equally as frustrating watching the team where you thought we won the World Series, we won the last real World Series they had, and we couldn't get over 500. I mean, we sucked last year during the tournament year, and we couldn't get back to 500 this year. So, you know,
Strasburg's hurt again. He's probably never going to be the pitcher he was 2 years ago.
Now, pull the Band-Aid off and let's get back to business and do it. I'm okay with it.
Should have kept Rendon. You would have had another World Series.
Yeah, I don't know. Rendon hasn't done it. I mean,
he hasn't done squat for the A's.
He hasn't done anything. He's been hurt,
the Angels,
too.
So,
anyway, I think it's interesting. And it's going to be fun, though. I mean, this made it – I mean, teams went for it at the trade deadline, right? I mean, they really, really went for it. And it's going to be pretty fun. It's particularly – I was saying how when we did our baseball extravaganza, we all said the NL East was going to suck. And that everyone should watch the NL West, where the Giants were probably going to put on a good show and had a really good chance at winning the division.
Right.
I remember exact opposite.
We need to roll the tape on that one.
So let's move right along to the next topic.
Or how about maybe in Vegas last month or whatever, when it was they are not going to make the playoffs
because they have not one good player on
not
their
one
team.
Good player on their team.
As somebody I know said, no one likes a historian.
But that one likes before they got Chris Bryant.
Right, okay. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, okay? Hey, wait, one more baseball note. Phelan, I think you pointed out that the NL East were a bunch of morons for letting the Mets draft.
Oh, my God.
Andy.
Play this goddamn tape. Rooster, what the fuck were you talking about with
the
Mets?
The guy was legitimately rated 3 through 10 in the draft the whole time. How was I supposed to know he had an elbow injury that they were hiding? Come on.
That's what our listeners expect from you is hard.
Yeah. Did you see how much? Did you see what Elise brought to us with the Olympics? You need to bring that with baseball.
I still would have signed him because he's going to be good one day. Mark my words.
Okay.
When we come back for our 500th episode and he's won the Cy Young, you can all
raise my hands. We have sleeves of SMQB on our arms.
Yes. Hey, wait a minute now. I have one more baseball story that's kind of funny. You know how we joked about the Cleveland Guardians and what a local yokel name that is?
Yeah, I love the Guardians.
They failed to like have some intern even take the basic step of checking to make sure ClevelandGuardians.com was an available domain name.
Oh no,
it is not. It is not.
Oh wow.
It along with the rights to the Facebook and Twitter pages is owned by a men's roller derby team. Now they're in trademark litigation with the Cleveland Indians over the Cleveland Guardians.
Well, didn't roller derby one of the Olympic
sports? How stupid can you be? I mean, just how technologically unsavvy can you be?
Maybe Cleveland can sign Kumar Rocker, and they can become the Cleveland Kumar Rockers.
That would be better. All right, we got a couple more things we got to hit on, but I'm going to force the issue here, and I'm going to mention Formula One racing for 1 minute. I'm going to take a little privilege here on this. Okay, so.
Before we do that, can we thank our supporters, Pirelli, Shell, UPS, and Ferrari?
Yes.
Well, thank you guys for your sponsorship.
We have room for Tommy John underwear and ZipRecruiter too. So
yeah,
guys, come on.
The Hungarian government's not gonna be sponsoring us in a minute though. So a couple quick notes. The drama's getting high in F1. For the first time in several years, we have Red Bull seems to have a car better than Mercedes. They've been taking it to them until last week. I guess it was last week. It wasn't 2 weeks ago, right?
Right.
2 weeks ago. Whatever, last
if you race. Can't beat them, run them off the track.
Right, you can't beat them, run them off the track.
2 weeks in a row.
Sir Lewis Hamilton may have gotten a little tight. It looked like kart racing, but the end result was Max Verstappen going into the wall and out of the race. And Hamilton won the race, inching up behind Verstappen in the world championship chase. Fast forward to this week, the Hungarian Grand Prix, and it starts out in rain. And Sir Lewis Hamilton's teammate, Valtteri Bottas, who likely will not be on the team next year and is not making friends in any of the garages that he may be hoping to participate in next year, like doing his best bowling ball impersonation, took out most of the front runners in the race right at the start of it, including he took out Verstappen. Verstappen was able to get back, but his car was badly damaged. He took out the other Red Bull driver, Sergio Perez, a bunch of other guys, including a young talent, Lando Norris.
Leclerc.
Leclerc, the Ferrari driver. I mean, it was carnage. Carnage at the race. We all knew it, and it was going to be a mess at the start, partly because of the rain. It was a great race after that.
Good for Vettel.
And a perhaps error in judgment by Hamilton left him after a red flag stop, left him as the only car on the start line after the red flag, because everyone else went in to change their tires. They all had the rain tires on. And I don't know if he didn't know what was happening or if he just made a bad call, but bottom line is everybody else went into the pits to put on the
fast. Because the sun was coming out.
Because the sun was coming out.
Yeah.
And Hamilton is sitting, there's a surreal scene. He's the only car
that was wild
at the starting line. Everyone else is in the pits. I guess they have to wait until he goes, and then they can start. But it's basically like a straight line of cars coming out of the pit lane, and it put him behind. He ended up last. And there was even they cut to the radio at one point. He says, "Am I last?" Like he didn't even know what happened to him, right? And so he races all the way back, but he can't quite get there. The point of the story though is Sebastian Vettel, who kind of got jerked around a little bit by Ferrari. Last year, he's a two-time world champion. He ends up, am I going to get this wrong? He's with Aston Martin this year.
That's right.
And he comes in second. Okay. Great race. Just couldn't
track
down Esteban Ocon from Alpine, who ran a great race, got his first Grand Prix win, and Vettel can't quite get there. Well, everybody who watched after noticed a couple things about Vettel, and that was that he was wearing a rainbow flag mask He had a rainbow flag on his helmet. During the weekend, he was seen with rainbow shoes on. And it did sort of raise an eyebrow of what's going on here. House, why was he wearing the rainbow stuff?
So it turns out with this race taking place in Hungary at the Hungaroring, well, in June of 2021, the Hungarian government, which is now following a lot of the rest of Europe to being a more kind of right-wing type of government, passed a law that basically outlawed homosexuality for all intents and purposes. And so Sebastian Vettel said, I'm going to demonstrate as an ally for the LGBTQ community that I support them regardless of this law, and I'm going to wear a rainbow shirt, rainbow mask, as you pointed out. And not only that, but after the race, when he was interviewed wearing all that stuff, the stewards of the race called him over to say, you can't be wearing that stuff. You can only wear official post-race uniform of your team. And he said, I don't give a crap. You can fine me. Which leads to your conspiracy theory,
and
Bison.
He said, in fact, I think he even said, disqualify me. I'll do it again. So what do the stewards do? There's a little known rule. Footnote one of rule 12.2 or whatever it is says that if the stewards ask, a driver has to provide a liter of fuel from their car for a test to make sure they're not putting something in their fuel in their engine. This race was so hard fought and hard raced that the guy literally, he came in second. Instead of doing the traditional sort of victory lap around, he literally stopped his car because he was going to run out of gas. And if he ran out of gas, I mean, it is a 2.5 mile track. He didn't want to have to walk back, you know, a mile and a quarter. So he stops the car. The stewards say, hey, we want to check your fuel today. Spot check. He's only got 0.3 liters in there. So because he doesn't have a full liter to turn over, F1 Racing disqualified him and takes away his second place. And don't tell me that wasn't Formula One Racing telling this guy, you don't fuck with the countries that we're in. You play nice by the rules. And damn if Formula One shouldn't have pulled that race out of Hungary 6 months ago when that law passed.
Exactly. Exactly. Why are they kowtowing to Hungary in the first place?
And why no one's talking about it, I don't know. So, you know, Sebastian Vettel, good for you, my friend. Do it again. But Formula One, don't think we don't know what's going on. Even if Toby thinks I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist. That is what happened here.
Well, how many other people did they check?
One.
Fuel. Anyone else?
George Russell, who also stopped his car on the track.
And was he short fuel too?
No, he was not short fuel.
No. So, assholes. Yeah. All right. This is the shortest. We're going to have the shortest punchable face of the week ever.
It's this week's punchable face.
Because we're running real long on time here, but we can't do an episode without a punchable face of the week. And this goes to one Novak Djokovic dickface. One day, this guy is calling out Simone Biles and talking about the pressure. You can't let the pressure get to you. If you want to be a champion, you have to be tougher. You have to get out there. And then he goes out and he loses his semifinal match in the Olympics, launches his racket into the stands at one point, and then, maybe because the pressure got to him a little bit, he packed up his racket and his balls and he went home. He didn't play the bronze medal match, and he bailed on his doubles partner for their match too. So,
did you hear that Nadal texted him, chastised him?
And said, oh, no.
Said you have to behave better than that. There are children watching. You're an embarrassment to the sport, basically.
Wow.
Good for him.
He deserved it. Yeah,
he deserved it. Djokovic, you're a fucking
Come on, guys. It was a layup for him to win the gold medal. There was no competition. I mean, what a choke and what an embarrassment that he is.
Yeah. We need and to punch him in the tennis balls.
He didn't just criticize Simone. He had this condescending tweet like, pressure is a privilege, my friend. You better learn to deal with it.
Yeah. Asshole.
Asshole.
I hope your ass goes down at U.S. Open coming up.
Yeah. All right, Pope, let's finish on a high note. Give it to us.
We talk about the Olympic spirit, guys, and we had a great story this week. If you look past the Simone Biles story, you'll see that Sunisa, and everybody's calling her Suni Lee, was the one who stepped up and won the all-around individual for the USA. And, you know, she's our next if we had Wheaties anymore, you know, she'd be the next Wheaties cover person. That was such a big deal for young Olympians. And the great story about her, though, is she's from Minneapolis, St. Paul. She's from the Hmong community, and they are of descendant from Laos. Her parents came over to escape persecution after the Vietnam War, because the Laotians, the Hmong community in Laos, they actually helped the U.S. And so they came over here. They have about 70,000 people who are from Laos, the Hmongs in Minneapolis, St. Paul. She's the first gymnast from that community. To make her story even, I guess, more interesting, unfortunately, her father 2 years ago was paralyzed in an accident. And during COVID, she lost her aunt and her uncle. So she's had so much adversity. And, you know, we talk about the Ted Lasso being such a great feel-good story. Her ability to overcome that adversity and to shine and win the gold medal, the story, you know, you saw the family, all of the friends and family who were gathered and the family dog, and they're, you know, everybody's crying. It was such a great moment. And for that, Suni Lee, you are my Ted Lasso. But more so than that, we have the Olympic spirit. So let's take it around.
Yeah, I mean, I confess, and I'm glad that our Olympic expert Elise is on today, because Elise brings to the forefront that we need to embrace things that aren't just in the prime time. And we did, as a SMQB pod, give the Olympics a hard time in our last episode. The
no. truth is,
that's before we heard about canoeing, though, you know,
yes,
in our defense.
Or the X Games and the dancing horses.
You know, to Pope's point, the truth is Olympics is about, it is about the Olympic spirit, these amateurs that rarely get this one opportunity to shine in something like canoeing or kayaking. And there have been some phenomenal stories, like the story of Saeed Molayi. And I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, Saeed, but Saeed Molayi is a judo competitor at the 81 kilogram, I guess, weight class of that judo competition. And Saeed won the silver medal. Saeed won the silver medal for Mongolia, but Saeed is not from Mongolia. Saeed is from Iran. But in 2019, Saeed was competing in the 2019 World Championships and was instructed by the Iranian team, once he reached the semifinals, that he had to lose the match against in the semis against Israel and not even compete against Israel's Sagi Mukhi. He wasn't even allowed to compete against him because that would require being on the same mat with their hated political rival, Israel, and possibly even having to shake hands. So Saeed was not even allowed to compete. And so after that, Saeed defected. He moved to Germany and then acquired Mongolian citizenship. And the person who really embraced him and supported that him during that time was Sagi Mukhi, the judo Olympian from Israel who he wasn't allowed to compete against in 2019. Well, this year, Mukhi didn't do too well. The Israeli judo competitor failed to advance to the finals, but Saeed did advance to the finals. And even though he took just the silver medal, not the gold, when he took the silver medal, what he said was that he dedicated his silver medal to the nation of Israel for supporting him these last 2 years when he had defected, and for the good energy. And he even said in the Hebrew language, Todah, to his friend Sagi Mukhi. That's a great story that very few people know about.
Great story.
or after in the high jump, when two Olympians, Gianmarco Tamberi of Italy or Mutaz Barshim of Qatar, both had cleared the bar at 7 feet 9.3 inches, and then they both had to go up to the next bar, 7 feet 10 inches, and both Tamberi and Barshim could not get over after three tries each, 7 feet 10 inches. And when that happens, at that point, there's supposed to be a jump off, dropping the bar back down. But Tamberi asked the official at that time, would it be possible for us to share the gold medal? And Barshim of Qatar right away said, let's do that. The official said, you can do that. They decided to share the gold medal, and they were both embracing and hugging on the track. It was an awesome scene. Or Katie Ledecky. If you heard the audio of Katie Ledecky, who is America's swimming sweetheart, after she lost to what would really be considered her rival, Ariane Titmus from Australia, after she lost, she came over to Ariane and said, you know, you raced great and thank you for pushing me. Like, who says that after they lose? Mm-hmm. That's the Olympic spirit. That's what we should really be celebrating. And these Olympians and the Olympic spirit is what's deserving of the Ted Lasso.
And let's not forget Victor Axelsen, who today won the gold medal in men's badminton, defeating Chen Long from China. Good job, Victor.
Wow. Oh, monumental upset. Yeah.
Chen Long lost.
Denmark with the gold over Chen Long.
Shame.
Congratulations, shame. Denmark. Good show, everybody. Elise, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Elise.
Gold medal for Elise. Gold medal for Elise.
Bill, get better soon. We need you back, buddy.
Yeah, we do.
See you guys.
See ya.
Bye.